Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our new website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Peristyle Podcast. It's a special version of the Peristyle Podcast. We call it the Recruiting Blast. We have Gerard Martinez, USCFootball.com national recruiting analyst, joining us on the line. What's up, Gerard? How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. It's the holiday season, and this is the time that recruiting starts to heat up. Interesting time for USC because they basically have a full class, and this is something unique. So we're kind of seeing how they're going to approach this, and I guess more importantly, how the commits themselves are going to approach this homestretch signing day.
Certainly, and we have a lot of topics to get to. There's been some questions over the past few weeks. We haven't done a recruiting podcast in about a month or so apologize for that, but we'll jump on here and try to get to some of the questions that were sent in. But before we do, just kind of give an overall, we're going to talk with Gerard a few of the major topics here. And I think first, Gerard, to me, when you talked about Lane Kiffin's plan coming through, trying to get through these sanctions, we both thought it was brilliant. No one had done it before. There wasn't a blueprint to go off of. And the way he, stocked up with the 30 guys in the 1 year and then, came back with a little under 15 the next year, plus the early enrollees, leaving two or three early enrollees for this class. And knowing that this class would probably be a pretty good one because the product on the field was supposed to be, they're supposed to be one of the best teams in the country. And, Lane Kiffin had already wrapped up the number one class, according to Rivals.com. I don't know if you could say it's based on some of the expectations that happened, that was going to happen during this year. Matt Barkley coming back, TJ McDonald coming back, AP number one to start the season. Obviously, USC fans know that it hasn't quite worked out that way. Still, still ranked number one, according to Rivals.com. But what kind of impact has this season had, going 7-5 and you're still not sure which bowl game is coming up? What kind of impact can this have on this class, which's ranked number one right now and possibly even down the road for the class of 2014 or 15?
Well, if you're talking about each recruit and kind of their feedback throughout the season after each loss, it's been minimal. It's been a disappointing season. I think you really have to look into January and when we get down to the stretch, how much it impacts, because right now the kids are still committed to USC. They have yet to take a lot of official visits, and there's going to be a group of guys that do take official visits. Now, the good thing for USC is that they also have a large group of those commitments that are going to be early enrollees. They've got seven guys right now that look like they're going to be early enrollees, and if they can get, about half the class in as early enrollees, and those guys don't take a bunch of visits and they, prolong the process until January, then it becomes a little easier. Then you at least got your foot in the door, and I think it also kind of reconfirms, reinstates the recruiting class. The kids that are not early enrollees can look and say, okay, Sua Cravens, committed, signed, done deal. He bought into it. Max Brown, signed, done deal, he bought into it. Justin Davis, signed, done deal, bought into it. And then so those guys that are not yet signed and they have to wait till February, there's a little more confidence, like, okay, the class is not going to fall apart on us. So that's a big deal for USC. And I think I'd like to go back to just what you said with the strategy and kind of the tactical decision on how to roll over scholarships. And really, we do have to say, it was a really well-played-out plan. I think USC maybe got a little ahead of themselves with the 30 class that they got there in 2010, 2011, mainly because, they wanted to get those numbers back to 85. That was the year where that, after the sanctions were announced, they had transfers, they had a lot of just guys kind of fall through the cracks, and they got real low on their scholarship numbers. They still had a year where they could play to 85. In 2011, so they wanted to get those numbers up, so they did for that last season get those numbers up. But I think they took a handful of guys as early enrollees specifically that wouldn't normally be recruited by USC, and so that kind of puts them in a place where they've got some guys on the roster still that are guys that are not going to contribute a whole lot, and they're kind of taking up space. But, you know, you can't really get too upset if you're a USC fan because, again, it was just who can we get in and how many guys can we get in? They were trying to get as many guys as they could to get back to that 85 number, and taking 30 guys, the only way you could do that is to take some of those guys as early enrollees. And unfortunately, you're always strapped, and, you know, who can get in early to a school like USC? It's, you know, there's some schools who can get a lot of junior college players in as mid-year grads. USC is not one of those schools, and they've been burned by that time and time again, trying to get a JUCO four-star prospect in, a guy that could maybe make an immediate impact, and then he falls through. You know, Jared Bowman would be a good example, a guy that looked like he was for sure going to be an early enrollee. He had planned to be an early enrollee, you know, out of his freshman year, seemed to have everything all lined up academically to be an early enrollee, and then the next thing you know, he can't get in as an early enrollee. He has to come in May. And that's all about those initial and original counters, and we've gone in about that, you know, time and time again on the Peristyle. I won't, you know, go into that again. But it's one of those things that it really affects the classes, and I think with USC, you know, they have done that great job of making sure they could kind of, you know, just make lemonade out of lemons, basically. And with this class, I think the real big thing now is this home stretch and the in-home visits and really kind of just, you know, again, crossing the T's and dotting the I's with the guys that are early enrollees. That's going to be very important to kind of solidifying the class and making sure that the core group, the real, I think, real important guys of the group get in. I mean, you've got really some of the best players that USC is going to have committed in this class are guys that are going to be early enrollees. You know, Kenny Bigelow, who's a 6'3", 295-pound defensive tackle. At this point, he's not taking any official visits. He's solid to USC. He's an early enrollee. He's crucial. He's a crucial part of this class as a defensive tackle. You can never get enough defensive linemen, and you can never get enough really good five-star defensive linemen. I mean, that's a guy that you can build around. Max Brown, you know, possible future quarterback, 6'5", 215 pounds, Army All-American. He's still playing right now. He's probably going to end up in the 4A Washington State Championship again for Skyline High School in Sammamish, Washington. Another five-star guy, another early enrollee, Sue Cravens, probably, you know, maybe the best player on the West Coast, a guy that's going to be coming in as a safety, you know, 6'1", 215 pounds, been completely dominant on both sides of the ball this year for Vista Marietta. He's a guy that's an early enrollee. He's a guy that could end up testing and pushing for a starting job next year for USC because of the loss of the safeties that they have. Justin Davis, a guy that I'm huge on. I think he's going to be a huge, huge asset to USC from the standpoint of he's a guy that squares his shoulders as a running back and gets north and south. He's a one-cut guy. He's 6'1", about 205, 210 pounds. He's going to get a lot bigger. He's going to get stronger. To me, he reminds me a lot of a Deshaun Jackson would be the opposite. Deshaun Jackson is kind of what USC is using right now as running backs, and that's why they can't get fourth and goal, third and goal, short yardage situations. They can't move the pile. They don't have running backs that can really break tackles on their own and create. Justin Davis is that guy that's going to be big enough and strong enough and fast enough to be able to get those yards where those yards don't normally exist because maybe the offensive line misses a block. You got Kylie Fitz, a 6'3", 6'4", 265-pound defensive lineman. He looks like he's going to be a defensive end, but another guy that you could bring in and maybe bulk up and move him inside. You've got, you know, Eldridge Massington. That's going to be a guy that we're going to have to watch a little bit. He's taken night school classes. He didn't really become a guy that was an early enrollee candidate until he blew his knee over the summer at a Tennessee volunteer camp. And so then the USC coaches said, well, you're not going to be playing football this fall, so now you got to be able to come in, be an early enrollee for us, be able to do some of your rehab here at USC so you can be ready for spring ball. So we're going to see, you know, now that his academic calendar has been kind of bumped up and he's trying to get out early, you know, these are the kind of guys that all of a sudden in the last minute, they don't have a course they're supposed to take or something falls through. Usually the guys that make it an early enrollees and you don't have to worry about, they have that plan for quite a while. And the guys that I've talked about, they've had that plan for quite a while. Chris Hawkins, another guy who's going to be an early enrollee, a great student, has had it planned for a while, 5'10", 165 pounds, a guy that, you look at USC's defensive secondary and a cornerback position, there's not a lot of depth there. There's not a lot of guys that are proven there. So, when you have guys like Chris Hawkins that are able to come in early and develop within the system, get another, semester of spring ball under their belt, that's going to be really huge for them. And so, right there for, the USC early enrollees, that's going to be very significant. The one guy, and I was kind of maybe saving this for a War Room tidbit, but since we haven't had a Peristyle podcast in such a long time, I'll drop it right now.
Woo.
There's going to be some question here whether Ty Isaac can get in early. There's still some back and forth. And if you remember, his school originally stated that they would not allow him to graduate early. Juliet Catholic has a policy in which they don't allow kids to graduate early. There's some tangled stuff with that. There's some other things going on. It's still kind of up in the air whether he's going to be able to get in to USC for spring ball. Still very solid. In fact, there was just another update from the Midwest that came up after we talked to him and kind of clearing the air on any rumors that he was talking to other schools. He's probably going to officially visit USC December 7th, but really this coach has got to go back there for their in-home visits, sit down with his counselors, kind of go over his transcripts and make sure that he can get in early. If he can't, then he's going to probably come in maybe January 18th with that other big group of committed recruits that are not going to actually sign until signing day. So the two big dates right now that we're looking at are December 7th for the early enrollees, and that will also include not just the commitments, but Leon McQuay, who's the five-star safety from Sefner, Florida, that USC has been recruiting for quite a while. He'll be there, and then you have the big January 18th visit, which will include the commits, and then a few guys that are not committed, maybe a few Southern guys that USC has been recruiting for quite a while, and we'll see how that shakes out. But really, it's about maintaining the core of this class, and like I said at the very beginning of my whole rant montage here, it's about solidifying that early group, because that's going to maintain confidence with the whole group afterward. It's kind of a domino effect. You start to have early enrollees start popping and taking visits, and all of a sudden there's wavering, then that would obviously cause those guys that are waiting until signing day to do the same. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes and how the core class kind of stays together.
That was Hook's question about which guys would early enrollees. He also wanted to know when the deadline was to submit their letter of intent. Actually, it's not a letter of intent, right?
It's really just financial paperwork, financial aid. They have some things that they sign, and sometimes they have some mock letter of intent papers that they sign just for the media and just at the school. December 15th, I believe, is the day that all happens. It could be December 9th, I think, is the earliest, and then I think it goes to December 15th. It's usually right before the dead period for recruiting.
Okay, and we can, before we get into some questions too, there's some battles for guys that are on this USC commit list. You said it's very important to keep these guys together. Do you want to go over some of the guys you haven't mentioned yet? Do you want me to name off names, or you just want to kind of rattle off some of the guys and what the battles
are?
Well,
we'll focus in, because we talked a little bit about some of the early enrollees and kind of where they stand already, so no need to kind of rehash that. I think, kind of like any war, there's going to be those little battles that to win the war, you've got to win those battles. And I think, for USC, there's guys that are still out there, those guys that are going to take those official visits, those are going to be the guys that they're going to have to really battle for. And it's mostly that group, that secondary group of guys that ends up waiting until signing day. Eddie Vanderdoes, 6'3", 305-pound defensive tackle from Placer, California, just took his official visit to UCLA. A lot of sources say that UCLA feels like they're very much in it. He likes UCLA. The one thing that he doesn't like about UCLA is the defensive scheme, and probably the lack of NFL production that the program has had over the years. They haven't had a lot of guys go into the NFL. They've had even fewer be successful from a defensive or offensive line standpoint in recent years. But he did like, Westwood, and definitely it sounds like he had a good time. He's going to take some more visits. There's a possibility that Notre Dame tries to get in there for an official visit. Oregon, basically every school that USC lost to this year is going to try to line up and get themselves an official visit because they have that card that says, hey, look it, we beat USC. Look at the season USC had. Look at the season we had. And so that, in that respect, you know, it opens up that door a little bit for these other teams to recruit against USC. And it was something that USC allowed to happen. You lose on the field, it just creaks that window open, that little door open, is just enough. Somebody can get their foot in there and say, hey, why don't you come in for an official visit? Or, hey, why don't I come in for an in-home visit and talk to your family? And then they can kind of, you know, negotiate a little bit of more contact. And then that's just basically kind of a slippery slope, if you will. So Eddie Vanderdoes is going to be a guy that they're going to have to battle with down the stretch. I'd say at this point he's probably roughly 70 to 75% committed to USC. You know, I know that sounds like, how can you be 75% committed to something? Aren't you, when you're committed, isn't the definition of committed being 100% ready to go? But in this day and age with recruiting, and I think we're obviously at some point going to have to adjust the terminology and how we talk about recruits and commits and this and that. I think the most we could do now is just kind of give you those gray areas. And at this point, I'd say if there was a scale from 100 to zero as far as being committed, I'd say he's in that 70 percentile right now for Eddie Vanderdoes. Jalen Ramsey, five-star quarterback who just came out here on an unofficial visit to Los Angeles, not just really to Los Angeles, but to Southern California. He actually went out, stayed with Chris Hawkins, went to the Ranch Cucamonga Vista Marietta game in Marietta last Friday to go just kind of hang out at the game. Went to the, you know, Ontario Mills Mall, Victoria Gardens, just kind of took a tour of Southern California and just absolutely loved it. He just loves California. He feels very comfortable in California. I think personality-wise, he's a kid, you know, from the first time I spoke to him, really jumped out at me as a USC-type personality, kind of kid that, you know, I think can leave home and really have no regrets. And, you know, this unofficial visit, which was, I believe, his third visit unofficially to Los Angeles and to USC, was a hit and really, I think, will go a long way to kind of solidifying his commitment. He's going to be a guy that's going to go through the process, though. He's going to take three more visits, and that's going to be the full allotment of visits. USC will get his last visit January 18th, but he's going to visit Mississippi State. He's going to visit Washington, and there's probably going to be an Alabama visit in there. The chatter there is that he might be slipping a little bit with Alabama. He might not be quite as high on Alabama as he's, you know, was maybe earlier in the summer. And, you know, Alabama came after him really hard after he committed to USC in the summer. And so there was a lot of talk there about Alabama. Florida's still there. He took, you know, his official visit to Florida earlier in the season. But right now he's USC's to lose. I'd actually put him more in that 80-85 percentile. I think he's pretty solid guy, but, you know, he's going back home, and it's the SEC. He's going to have a lot of people in their ear, and he's living in Tennessee, and we all know people hate Lane Kiffin in Tennessee, so he's got to hear that every day. So it's going to be something that, you know, wears on him a little bit, but I think personality-wise, he's the kind of kid that's really not going to bear under the pressure. I think that might even kind of work against those schools trying to recruit him. Then you've got Jason Hatcher, who's just up the road there in Louisville. You know, Jason's kind of an interesting guy because Jason's a guy that hasn't really been able to get into his official visits. You know, Trinity High School, the high school he goes to, is a national power, and they've, you know, been pretty big on the high school scene the last few years. And so, you know, with these kind of schools, you're just not taking off and going on visits on Friday nights. You know, high school coaches really just don't put up with it. So he's a guy that's kind of had to push everything until after the season, and we're going to see kind of how it plays out with him. 6'3", 240-pound defensive end, going to be another big guy for USC because he's a defensive lineman, and USC needs those defensive linemen. They've got a good young defensive line, a good nucleus now. You definitely want to add to it. I mean, this can be really what takes them to that next level of being a dominant defense again, is bringing in this young group of guys and having that depth and that rotation of quality players along the defensive line. Hatcher brings that as a weak side defensive end, a guy that's athletic enough to kind of be a stand-up outside linebacker, you know, in a two-point stance, but, you know, big and strong enough that when he develops, he's going to be a great weak side rusher. He's looking at Louisville. He's looking at Ohio State. He's looking at Florida. The thing that I didn't mention with Jalen Ramsey that also comes into play, I think, with Jason Hatcher is Tennessee. The Tennessee job is going to be very intriguing and kind of interesting to watch. Right now, Jalen's not really thinking about Tennessee. Jason is kind of waiting to see what happens with Tennessee. If they bring in a coach, and it really doesn't matter which coach they bring in, whoever they bring in, the first guy they're going to target is going to be Jalen Ramsey. That is going to be target number one, because you got to go in and make a statement, and you got to tell the Vol fans, hey, look, we're locking down our state. That's the first thing you hear out of a coach's mouth in his initial press conference every time. He'll sit down and he'll say, we're going to build a fence around our backyard, and people aren't going to take, you know, anybody from Tennessee's backyard and beat us with them. And then we're going to go out to Georgia, and then we're going to go out to South Carolina, et cetera, et cetera. But the guy that they're going to want to make a statement with is Jalen Ramsey. And the second guy they'll probably want to make a statement with is Jason Hatcher. So that's going to be interesting to see if they actually bring in a coach that can make some waves with those two and maybe sway them a little bit. They're going to recruit them really hard, but that's not so much the issue is, you know, do they bring in a guy like Kirby Smart? Do they make a big enough hire that is intriguing enough to the recruits where all of a sudden Tennessee becomes a player again on the recruiting trail? You also have on the defensive line to Rodney Prevost, who's a 6'3", 215-pound defensive end from Houston, four-star Army All-American. Most of these guys we've talked about are Army All-Americans. That's also going to play into kind of the home stretch of this recruiting process, so that you got 14 guys committed to USC all playing in the Army All-American game. So they'll be down there in San Antonio with us for a whole week. That sometimes helps solidify the bond with all these commits. With Tarani Prevost, he's looking at Oklahoma, and he's looking at Texas A&M. Obviously, Texas A&M, kind of a hot name right now, local school. I think the thing with Prevost, he's really looking for that private school education. That was a big deal. The two schools that really stood out to him, you know, going through the process and taking unofficial visits were Cal and USC. And so the education thing is a real big factor for him. His uncle, who's kind of his guardian, is a school teacher. So, you know, it's not just talk with him. You know, he's definitely got some family and some people that are in his background that are big influences on him that really demand that he looks at a school that has a big-time education, and that's kind of always been the thing with USC. But, again, you know what? Distance is also a factor, and when, you know, you're not producing on the field, it can create second thoughts. So Prevost is going to be a guy that they're going to have to battle with. So, you know, there's that group of guys that, you know, USC is going to have to work on. It's going to be one of those things that down the stretch, the guys that they really want to keep, and they want to keep all those guys. I don't think there's any kind of leeway. I think with the defensive linemen specifically, I don't think you can ever get enough defensive linemen. They're going to continue to recruit some guys that, you know, like Montrevious Adams, a 6'2", 280-pound defensive tackle from Georgia, who, you know, they're going to try to bring in him on an official visit. They're, you know, still talking to Carl Lawson, who's a 6'2", 250-pound defensive end, who's a five-star from Georgia. That's another guy that, you know, they're going to try to bring in on the visit. You want to make sure that you have some plan Bs just in case a guy like Prevost or Hatcher starts to have second thoughts. But you want to take all those guys. And I think that's really where the battles are and will continue to be up until signing day.
All right. Well, let's jump into some of these questions now that you've hit all the topics about the commitments and stuff and those battles and what's going on there. Let's see. We go to... I put some stuff on Twitter, too, so we're going to have some Twitter commitments and questions, in a bit. JD in D.C., and I think we had one other one. JD in D.C. wanted to know about Max Redfield and what his status is there with his decommitment and what's going on with all of that.
Well, USC actually went on an in-home visit Monday, or was it Sunday? Actually, it was Sunday for Max Redfield, and had a meeting with him. He did not go to the USC-Notre Dame game. He actually had a basketball game at Mission Viejo, so he wasn't able to go down to the game. But the 6'2", 295-pound four-star safety is still pretty much Notre Dame's to lose. He's going to take that official visit to Oregon. That's going to be, you know, a big deal for him. Oregon's kind of always been a school there for him. But right now, he's Notre Dame's to lose. And I don't know what USC really can do to really get back in that race. USC's not out of it. They definitely need to secure that official visit. There's a possibility he officially visits USC, but he has not committed to officially visiting USC. And that tells me something. I mean, that tells me, you know, if he decides, oh, I'm going to go visit some other school, maybe LSU, maybe some other random school, you know, he's got his visit to Notre Dame. He's got a visit to Washington scheduled. He'll have his visit to Oregon. And then, you know, there's kind of those two more trips there that are dangling out there. If he takes five visits, and it's going to be hard, I mean, he needs to start taking those visits because it's hard to take five visits all in January, especially if you're playing in the All-Star games. It becomes pretty difficult. And it kind of wears on you. So it depends on kind of which visit you're taking when and how it impacts on you. So USC still kind of has to fight for that that official visit. And that's kind of where they stand at this point. They're fighting for an official visit. That's on the outside looking in. I think right now Max Redfield definitely feeling Notre Dame. And Notre Dame's got to be number one on this list with Oregon kind of floating around out there. I'd actually put USC at three right now.
Okay, let's go to our first Twitter question. This is from Chris Houston, the Heisman pundit. I had a discussion with him at the USC-Notre Dame game, and he wanted to know, is USC ever going to sign another tailback with breakaway speed?
I'm sure they will. It's not going to be in this class. I don't think you could really say that Ty Isaac or Justin Davis are guys with that quote-unquote elite speed. Justin's definitely fast for his size, and Justin, I think, is really kind of his moves are unsuspecting. You know, he's a guy that you look at and you go, okay, he looks like a big, good-looking combo back. But we saw him at the opening in the Rivals Five-Star Challenge in Atlanta, and really a guy that made some pretty impressive open field moves and some cuts and just kind of lined some guys up to get away from them with two-hand touch. And you're not talking about contact. You don't really expect that from a guy that's, you know, 6'1", 205 pounds. And he's really one of those guys, like I said earlier, he's going to put on a lot of weight. I mean, he was the least developed guy that we had at the five-star challenge. I mean, you put him next to guys like Greg Bryant, you know, even the junior Leonard Florette from Louisiana, New Orleans, who's a five-star 2014 prospect. I mean, you know, Justin was, he looked like he was just, you know, coming into high school compared to development. And so he's a guy that's going to, he's got his best football ahead of him. He's going to be a big deal, but it's not going to be, you know, the elite speed back in that class. You know, 2014, haven't seen that guy necessarily either. It looks like another class that, you know, I talked about Fournette. It looks like another class where you're going to have power backs, you know, big guys. And so it's just one of those things, you know, those guys don't come along, you know, ever so often. You know, C.J. Spiller, you know, the Reggie Bushes of the world. You know, USC's had some of those guys kind of into their sights. I know they felt like Michael Goodson was going to be a big deal. You know, Percy Harvin was a guy that was kind of going to come in and take over for Reggie Bush and be the next Reggie Bush. And USC missed out on a couple of those guys. So they ended up bringing in a lot of guys that they kind of hoped would fill that role, but ended up being more combo backs. And, you know, I think you do have to look the track to see if a guy's really got that elite speed. I mean, you can watch the film, see if, you know, he can break those angles. But to really get that sense of, okay, he is this fast, you kind of have to go and put the watch on him. And most of these guys, if they're really, really, really fast, they are running track too. You know, you see a lot of 4.3s and 4.4s in the database with guys that are, you know, 5'10", 180 pounds. And then you watch him, you go, you know, he's fast, he's quick, but the difference between being fast and quick is you know, sometimes, you know, that 40 yards. It's that, you know, getting past that initial first wave of the defense and then getting in that secondary and being able to kind of hit that other gear and get past that safety who's trying to break that angle on you. So, yeah, right now there's nobody that just jumps into sight that, oh, yeah, that's the guy. That's the guy that could be an elite speed guy. But, you know, at the same time, you can't just go after a guy that's a track guy that weighs 175 pounds and just cross your fingers and go, well, you know, he's really fast. We know he's really fast. He runs 10.5 legitimately. Let's hope if, you know, he can play running back. You know, you don't want to do that either. So I like the direction USC has gone just with this recruiting class. I think they got two of the best guys they could possibly get for what they need to do as an offense and kind of where they need to go for an offense. I think this past year, their short yardage situation was a debacle. It was a mess. It was a mess because the offensive line didn't play well, but it was also a mess because they had a guy that was 5'7", 190 pounds as their premier tailback. You know, Silas Red's a serviceable guy, but, you know, he's only about 5'9", 5'10", 205 pounds, and he was his first year in the offense. So really you're looking at Rudy McNeil as a guy that's really your better running back. He's certainly not going to move any piles. When they bring in Justin Davis, they bring in Ty Isaac, those guys are going to take a little while to develop and to be, you know, those big-time guys. I don't know how much you can put on freshmen, but with, you know, hopefully Trey Madden coming back and being, you know, healthy and returning from the ACL, you've got a stable of guys that can kind of move that pile. They can lean forward on runs and get those extra 2-3 yards, which USC wasn't getting this year, and they ended up being, you know, 4th and 2, 4th and 1, and they weren't being able to get that either.
All right, let's get back to an email question. This one is from Lee in the Moreno Valley. He said, why doesn't USC recruit these running quarterbacks? It seems to me that every team they play has one or two. Isn't it time that SC starts looking into recruiting more athletic quarterbacks, at least to practice against, so the defense is not so surprised every time they see one? That's Lee in the Moreno Valley.
Well, the first issue is that you don't have the scholarships to just bring in a quarterback that you can practice against. So you can't just bring in a guy and go, well, you know what, he doesn't fit our system, he's never going to play for us, but he's great for our scout team. You can't do that with the 75. That's an issue. 85, it's debatable. 75, can't do. The other reason they haven't recruited them is because offensively USC does not run that system. However, it doesn't mean that they haven't actually looked and targeted those guys. They haven't brought any in, but they have had plenty of guys over the years that they've recruited, you know, during the processes, during the recruiting cycles, that have been quote unquote dual threat quarterbacks. And you can just go back to a year ago, USC recruited Tyler Miles, and they came in late on Tyler Miles and really kind of gave him a lot to think about. They were nowhere in his recruitment for the longest time, and it was really not until the end of November, December, did they actually, you know, get into talking to him and get him in on an official visit. And, you know, it was kind of one of those things where he's at the podium and he's not sure what he wants to do. And so there was a real chance there that USC could have gotten Siler Miles. Siler Miles was more of your, you know, dual threat guy that's athletic type quarterback. You can adjust your system to your talent, and I think in that situation, USC may have done that. I don't think Lane Kiffin is quite as against having a little more of a spread system than maybe Pete Carroll was. I think Lane Kiffin really, quite frankly, wants to win, and if he feels like he can adjust the offense to, you know, whatever quarterback he has, he's going to do that. It's just one of those things that they have the reputation for the pro-style offense, and so the pro-style quarterbacks, I think, take them more seriously. I think if you're a guy like Siler Miles, you know, Lane Kiffin may be sitting in your living room talking about, hey, look, it, you know, we'll adjust our system to fit your talents. And if you can run, then we'll run some zone read option. If, you know, you don't want to run, then we won't do that either. Whatever you want to do, I don't think you buy into that as much because you don't have the pedigree. There's no tradition for that. There's nothing on tape that shows USC running a spread offense, that shows USC running the zone read with the quarterback. So it's you go, well, you know what, Washington, it's a little, you know, easier to believe that, hey, they have quarterbacks that have kind of run that system. They do that more. So it's kind of a chicken and an egg thing. You know, you want to bring one of those guys in to run that system, but it's hard to sell those kids on that system. So if you don't have them in your system, you can't run the system.
Okay, let's go back to Twitter. Mr. Warhop, at Mr. Warhop, he says, is it possible we could see Michael, he says Michael Hutchinson's, Michael Hutchings is what he means, at safety at USC? If so, good move?
No, I don't think so. I think he's definitely going to play linebacker. I think at one point, I mean, he did play some safety at De La Salle early in his career, and at one point it kind of looked like, well, maybe he's a guy that would be more of a strong safety. Well, he's grown out of that. He grew out of that this summer, and really towards the end of the summer, we saw him put on that weight, and we saw him real early at the Southern California Nike camp, and he'd actually lost weight because he'd been sick. He lost like 5-6 pounds that weekend, and he was looking kind of slimmer, and it was like, oh, okay, he's, you know, not really put on as much weight as you kind of expect him to. And then you saw him later in the summer kind of at a healthy weight, and he's, you know, he's definitely he's in that 220, getting into the 225-pound range, and I think definitely a linebacker, possibly even a Mike linebacker. I really, really liked what I saw from him from a a field general standpoint. You know, when we saw him at the opening, he was a guy that was playing like linebacker, and he really made those checks at the line. He seemed very comfortable making sure that he was not only lined up correctly, but the guys around him were lined up correctly. You know, the shifts and the motions that the teams were doing in the 7-on-7 tournaments, he was making those calls and pointing guys out. He just seemed real natural and comfortable in the middle of the defense. And I think if he continues to put on weight, you know, he's got a nice size to him. He's not too tall. He's not that big angular linebacker that you kind of go, okay, I'm not real sure about him. And maybe, you know, disengaging from offensive linemen just leverage-wise, he's pretty stout. You know, he's got a frame on him that's pretty stout. He could, if he gets a little taller, you might look at him more as maybe a Sam, but there's a possibility he could come in and play some Mike and be a legitimate linebacker down the line for USC. I, of course, have to note, I've been a big proponent of putting Hayes Puller at middle linebacker. I think it's more about the player, his style of play, the intangibles he brings, than, okay, we just have to put a guy there that's 240 pounds. And obviously, we're going to see what happens with USC's defense if Monty sticks around, if there's some changes in the defensive coordinating. You know, that could definitely change, okay, who you kind of want playing Mike linebacker. I don't foresee USC getting away from the 4-3. I think they're sticking with the 4-3. I think that that shell concept is kind of where they feel very comfortable with. I think because Lane has more ties to that system and is probably more comfortable with the coaches that run that system, that's the guys he's going to bring in. And we've heard talk, you know, if Monty Kiffin steps down and leaves, maybe Dwayne Walker comes back in the mix, who was, you know, actually a former USC coach before he went to UCLA. Now he's at New Mexico State as a head coach. There's been some talk, you know, obviously Joe Barry would be a name. You know, we're not sure what's going to happen with the Chargers organization and North Turner, but he was a guy that was a linebacker coach at USC and then went over to the Chargers. Word on the street is he's actually making less with the Chargers than he was at USC. Monty Kiffin's making about a cool mil at USC, so there's going to be a lot of money to play with if he steps down. You know, look for USC to do something, but stick with that 4-3 system. I just don't think they're going to go away from it and all of a sudden do something crazy and go, hey, we're going to run a 3-4 or a 3-3 stack or something real different that's going to change, you know, how we use the personnel that's already on the roster.
All right, let's go back to Twitter. This is from jbrax1122. What are the chances with Trey Johnson and Priest Willis?
You know, not terrible with Trey Johnson. Trey Johnson's actually been in contact with USC for a long while. Set up an official visit to USC for January 18th. We're going to see if, you know, that follows through. Obviously, with Auburn and the coaching change, that's, you know, affected him. But he was already looking around. It seems like when they recruited Reuben Foster, Auburn meaning recruiting Reuben Foster, the five-star linebacker that was living in Georgia and then crossed the border and went to Auburn, Alabama, actually goes to Auburn High School now, got a big tattoo of Auburn on his forearm. I'm not sure how you decommit when you get a tattoo, but we'll see. But once Auburn actually got him to flip over from Alabama and commit to Auburn, it seemed like, you know, Trey Johnson started looking around and going, you know, they had me committed and now it's all about Reuben Foster. So that's kind of played into a little bit, his looking around. You know, Penn State was there. He was looking a little bit of Penn State, looking a little bit of Florida. He's going to look around at the SEC and maybe even the Big Ten. USC's been a school there for him for a while, and it looks like he's going to take that official visit. So if you take that official visit, there's a possibility that, you know, USC has with Trey Johnson. Priest Willis, I feel, is just cool on USC. I think that there's been a parting ways there. I don't get the vibe that USC, I think at some point, just kind of got frustrated. They wanted to get him committed early. They wanted to just kind of wrap things up with him, and he just never was ready to do that. Then there was a lot of stuff going on just with, you know, other guys that they could recruit, other cornerbacks, and I think just questions as to, okay, you know, where does Priest Willis fit into all of this with him going back and forth and flirting with all these schools? You know, a lot of people feel like he's going to end up at UCLA. I can see that. You know, I can see with him and Tahan Goodman, the 6'2", 195-pound safety from Ranch Cucamonga, I can see them both ending up at UCLA, but kind of sort of feel like there's a chance Priest Willis could end up somewhere else. I think Priest Willis could end up really a lot of places. LSU is going to be an interesting visit for him. I think Colin Goodman definitely ends up local, and I think UCLA's kind of becoming his leader by a good margin. But with Priest, I could see one of those things where, Tom Goodman thinks that they're both going to UCLA, and then, at the last minute, all of a sudden, Priest ends up going to LSU or Arizona State or just a weird school. I think he's more capable of that. How does that, play with USC? It means USC's not ever going to really be out of it, I think. I think there's always a little possibility, but right now I feel like that's cooling, and I don't know that USC's really recruiting him hard, and I don't know that Priest is really feeling USC. And it's not so much Priest, it's just I think his entourage, everybody around him, I think wants him to look at other schools. I think Priest, quite frankly, would have committed to USC when he was offered back in the spring on the spot, but it didn't happen. It wasn't in the plans. And so I think from that point on, USC kind of had to look at some other options.
Let's see. It's Greg Rosales from Twitter wants to know, does USC go after a safety with the last spot or try to get someone from Auburn? And he puts Lawson in parentheses. Anyone else? What are your thoughts? You already talked about Priest Willis, but any other thoughts about what they could do?
Both. They could do both. It kind of just depends on how things play out and what the number situation is. But we know they're going to go after Leon McQuay, the third. Leon McQuay was on the radar, always on the radar. It didn't even matter if Tahan Goodman would have committed to USC and Max Redfield would have stuck around. I think they still would have been on Leon McQuay. He's been very high on their board for a long time, and so he's going to be one of those guys as a safety that USC continues to recruit. Is there going to be another guy that pops up, a plan B that pops up? If they lose out on Redfield and Tahan Goodman goes to UCLA, possibility. Yeah, there's some talk about Tyler Foreman. He just recently committed to Wisconsin. He's a 6'1", 180-pound safety from Crespi High School, who we've seen a few times, kind of thought that he'd develop into being more of a linebacker in college, but evidently he went to the Rising Stars camp and played really, really well as a cornerback. So that kind of surprised a lot of people, and they liked him. There's still the Robinson twins out there. There's still a possibility with those guys officially visiting USC. You've got Tyrell and Tyree Robinson, both about 6'4", 200 pounds roughly, a linebacker. And, Tyree's a guy who could play safety, or he could play wide receiver. And so we'll see what happens with the wide receiver position, because we talked about Edwards Massington and him getting in. Sebastian LaRue is a guy that really I don't think is going to be a receiver at USC. I think he's got to play cornerback. And even then, I think that's an issue because he doesn't want to. I think he wants to be a receiver. He's told me time and time again he wants to be a guy that can contribute as a true freshman at wide receiver. I don't see that happen at USC. I don't even think if Robert Woods leaves, I see that happening at USC. So that's going to be something that, we kind of watch and see how that plays out. That receiver position might pop open. It might not be all about safety, but Tyree is a guy that could play both. Tyrell is a guy that's definitely outside linebacker, perhaps grows into being a defensive end. Both of those guys are committed to Oregon, but as I said, there's going to be some recruiting there, and there's going to be some guys looking around, and those guys are possibilities as well. Carl Lawson, possibility. Montrevious Adams, possibility. I don't think you ever really can have enough defensive linemen, especially good defensive linemen. So I think anybody that they can have visit that they feel is a quality guy, they're going to give them a look. And when you've got guys like Eddie Vanderdoes going and taking their visits, hey, it's got to be a two-way street. You're going to look around. Okay, we're going to look around too.
Okay, let's see. We got, I think, one more. Actually, two more here. This is Twiggy Dig. Who in the class, I know it's kind of a strange Twitter name, who in this class has the most potential to make an immediate impact in their first 2 years, a la Marquise Lee or Ray Maluga?
Always very hard to predict. I think Marquise Lee, nobody really saw him coming as being the guy that would contribute the most as a freshman. I think, with Ray and Brian Cushing and those guys, that was a little more easier to spot. But I think we all thought Marquise Lee really was going to end up playing free safety for USC and being that first free safety that they've had in a number of years that was actually a coverage free safety, a guy that was really a ball hawk and not more of a physical linebacker type that Pete Carroll had and Lane Kiffin has had in his first few years. Marquise Lee was harder to spot. there could be, you know, a guy like that. You know, Stephen Mitchell is a guy that has really, really blown us away this year as a receiver. Tremendous talent, a guy that works hard, who's smart. You know, he's not big, but he plays big. You know, he's powerful. A guy that can definitely be an asset to you on kick returns. You know, we've seen him on punt returns and kick returns this year against some very good teams, Modern Day, Corona Centennial. And he's been really, really difficult to stop. I mean, he's been the guy that you hold your breath every time he catches the ball. And so, you know, that's a guy that could be a sneaky guy, like kind of like Marquise Lee, that comes out of nowhere that ends up being this big-time player, especially, you know, if you lose Robert Woods to the NFL draft. And that opens up that spot, you know, even more for a guy like Stephen Mitchell, that nobody would really see him coming. I think that, you know, the defensive linemen are always, that's a position where it's a little more, you know, blow the whistle and let them go at it. So, you know, Kenny Bigelow and Eddie Vanderdoes and, you know, even, you know, Tarani Prevo is an interesting prospect. You know, he wants to come in to USC at about 235, 240 pounds. Right now he weighs 217. If he's able to put on that weight, you start to look at the guy and go, okay, this is a different animal than we saw in high school. You know, what we saw during the summer was a guy that really kind of looked like a Michael Morgan type, a guy that was a defensive end, played like a defensive end, but physically was a linebacker. And you go, he's never going to be able to put on enough weight to be able to be a guy that can put his hand down and play against these 6'6", 300-pound offensive tackles. Well, he gained 15 pounds literally in about a month and a half from when we saw him in Portland to when the beginning of his season started. So if he's actually able to put on that weight and get into USC at 230 pounds, I mean, that's a guy that's a very dynamic player. Granted, you already have Devon Kennard and you have Morgan Breslin there. It's going to be hard for him to crack the lineup. But like I said, with defensive linemen, there's less of that process of understanding the game plan and all these things that with X's and O's terminology and scheme, it's a little more, hey, go and play, you know, plug and play type position. And I think with Bigelow and I think with all those defensive linemen, you know, you have a chance for somebody to just jump up and grab a spot and really impress. So I say, you know, definitely the defensive line is going to be, you know, a big position to watch for true freshmen. And I probably that safety position with Sue Cravens, to answer the question, if I was putting money on it, would be the guy, just because he's smart. He's coming in early. He's a guy that's very, from an attitude and a composure standpoint, older than his age would suggest. And it's funny because he's actually a year behind his class in terms of age. You know, he was 16 turning 17 when everybody was 18 or 17 turning 18 in the 2013 class. So he's got much more physical development ahead of him. But the safety position, because there's going to be, you know, some openings there and some opportunities there because guys are leaving. That's going to be a position where USC has to find somebody. You know, they have to find somebody that can come in and can play early for them. And Sue Cravens being the best player on the West Coast, I think, and you know, that kind of includes maybe Max Brown. I'm kind of, you know, apples and oranges as far as trying to compare, you know, a quarterback and how big of an impact he can have to a safety. I just think, you know, Sua could just do it all. He's just one of those guys that if you put it, you know, football was a one-on-one game and you had, you know, a guy that had to block, tackle, catch, throw, do it all, he'd be that guy that you want to get. And so I think with Sua, I find it hard for him to stay off the football field. I just think he's going to find a spot somewhere doing something at some point. And to say, like I said, the safety position, the need position, that lends itself to that.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Gerard, for coming on the show. We cannot let
you. Is that it? That we're done?
We're done, man. Well, it's like 50 minutes already, but we're not going to wait another month. We'll be probably doing these weekly now, at least going through signing day. So send in your questions, podcast@uscfootball.com. You can, you know, go on peristylepodcast.com as well and leave us a voicemail there. Gerard will be answering questions. We'll try to do these every week now, because recruiting is going to take over pretty much the focus of what we're going to talk about on uscfootball.com through signing day. So, Gerard, thanks again for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right, everyone else, thank you very much for tuning in to the Peristyle podcast. Don't forget, you can check out uscfootball.com for more information. Lots of scoop that Gerard will drop every Friday in the war rooms and on the Peristyle. If you don't have a subscription, we're giving away 30-day free trials right now. Just go to the sign-up page on uscfootball.com and enter the promo code USC30. That's USC30. And then if you have one and you want to give the gift of a subscription to somebody else, someone, one of your friends that loves USC, loves Trojans, wants to get the scoop, give the gift of scoop. You can go to uscfootball.com, click on the gift subscription icon, and actually if you give someone a year subscription, you get 30 days free yourself. So check that out. Some good stuff for the holidays. Thanks again. We'll be back with the regular podcast on Monday. We'll see you then.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.